I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room. Boom, 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 boom. Yeah. So you wanna be a rider? Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the rent room. We let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Red Room.
You know, at the time, it was like all the studios were basically just like, we want to get everybody commenced that we have to get commenced before a possible work stop, you know, before like the strike, because, you know, they weren't sure if we were really serious, if we were really going to walk out. So they just hurried up, I think, and commenced me to write the second draft. But then before I could actually do it, strike happened, and mm-hmm. so I it was like, you know, pencils down. And so what I one of the things on the strike, like, you know, like everybody else, I was like, what the fuck am I gonna do, da da da, and I'm on the picket lines or whatever. And I got to, you know, as a feature writer, you don't get to know a lot of other writers, like mm-hmm. I said, you might see people in the room in passing, you know, mm-hmm. but like, it's not like TV rooms where right. you just have this big network of writers that, you know, it's very solitary, right. and that's all I'd done at that point was features. I hadn't written anything in TV, mm-hmm. and so I got to know on the picket lines, like a lot of us did, you know what I mean, you get to know other writers. And so inevitably, of course, what are you working on? What are you working on? And so I was like, I'm working on this thing, and I got this note that I don't know what the fuck to do with. And I kind of just workshopped it, just like talking it through. Mm. You know what I mean? And then at some point, I clicked and I figured out, like, oh, da 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 da. So then when the strike was over and ready to go, like, I had my third act worked out, dived in, and that's ultimately what went into the movie.
Mm-hmm. I just ask you a question, because I want to get the timeline right, because I think people should know this. New Edition was before this, wasn't it?
It was right around the same time. Yeah, New Edition. So as I'm at this place, I was at Evolution, and agency wise, I was at UTA. I'd been signed by UTA, and here's how the business can work, right? Do your best draft on everything that you get. So that novel that I wrote for Miramax, Bling, I only got to write one draft of that. Harvey himself put the kibosh on it. You know what I mean? He was like, he'd read the first draft and he's just like, no, fuck it, not doing it. And that was it. I never got to do a second draft and didn't get any notes, whatever. But I thought the strongest first draft of that I could do. Mm-hmm. That script, I didn't know it was like making its way around, and it found its way to this guy named Jesse Collins. And he had read it and was like, oh, this guy, you know, it was set in the music, and he was like, he seems to have like an ear for like music industry related shit. Right. So we had a mutual friend. The guy gave him my number and he just cold called me. You know what I mean? And so, my friend, our mutual friend called me first. This guy named Niles Kirshner, who manages Mike Epps. Mm-hmm. And they go back and at one point I think I was developing something for Mike or whatever. So he knew me. So he's like, hey, I have this friend, Jesse Collins. And, you know, he wants to talk to you about something. I say, okay, cool. So Jesse calls me and Jesse's like, hey, introduces himself. He had no company, you know, like he does now. He was working for this other producer. And primarily he did like award shows. Like they did mm-hmm. like the Grammy Awards.
This is 2007.
This is actually 2006. This is 2006.
Oh, okay.
And so he calls me and he's like, hey, you know, long story short, I have a relationship with the group New Edition, mm-hmm. and I think there's a movie there. He's like, and I read something that you wrote. Would you be interested in writing a movie about New Edition? Mm-hmm. And I was like, hell yeah. You know, I'm a huge fan. Yeah. I grew up with them, whatever. He's like, I'm going to tell you right now, I have no money. It's not set up anywhere. Yeah. You know what I mean? And he's just like, all I have is the relationship with them because I'm one of the producers on the BET Awards, and they mm-hmm. just did, last fall, they just did this BET, right. you know,
that,
whatever.
That big... Yeah. Come back or whatever.
And he also used to work in radio. He used to work at The Beat back in the day, mm-hmm. whatever. So he knew like a couple of them that way. And he was like, I've just seen the way they work behind the scenes and dysfunction there. And he's mm-hmm. like, I really think there's a movie. So I mm-hmm. rapped to them about it. And, you know, a lot of people have approached them over the years, but I've he convinced them for whatever reason that he could make this thing happen.
True producer can do that.
There you go.
That is their job.
You just got to speak it into existence a lot of times. I mean, Jesse had no fucking credit. He never produced anything. He'd written on like The Parenthood. Like he was a staff writer on that. Right. But like Jesse, you know what I mean? He just has, you know, so I mean, I look at it now and like all the shit that he's doing or whatever. But I remember when he was working out of somebody else's office and just, you know, and like paying for a lot of shit out of his own pocket. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So he puts me on the phone. He's like, you know, let's just do like a feel out call. He puts me on the phone with Mike Bivens and Ricky Bell.
Wow.
And I'm just like, I'm sitting there. I remember this is my old apartment in Torrance, and I'm sitting on the couch, and you know, they just start talking to me like, yeah, you know, and then they just start telling me a couple stories. Let me tell you about the time we met Curtis Blow, and he fucking dissed us. You know what I mean? We were the biggest Curtis Blow fans in the world. And so, like, as they're telling me, I just grabbed my notebook and I just started writing shit down, right?
And that's in the movie too. Yeah,
it is.
Yeah,
it's, yeah, yeah, changed, right? Yeah, so they were just telling me these stories, and like, you know, and so. Basically, the call went really good. It wasn't like a super long call, but like they were comfortable with me, and more even than me, they just had like a lot on their minds that they wanted to say. So Jesse's like, "Hey, that went pretty good. Like, let me see if like they'll talk to some of the other guys and see if they'll talk to you." So over the course of the rest of that time in 2006, the whole time also while I'm developing lottery ticket at the same time, I was interviewing the members of New Edition like one on one. I'd have to fly around the country. You know, they lived in different parts.
On your own dime.
Jesse's dime.
I'm about to say.
Yeah.
At least, yeah.
Okay. Now I do it on my dime, but back then, yeah. So, you know, and the because they lived separate places, it was kind of an accident, a happy accident, that I had to interview them all one-on-one. Mm-hmm. They were used to, from being like stars for so long, they were used to doing like group interviews, whatever. Sure. But there were things that they would not say in front of each other.
Trust me,
but
I'm doing the doc right now. Yeah. I'm dealing with the same bullshit.
But to me, one-on-one, and it was just like, I was a writer, but what I realized, and I've told them this, I was like, I became like kind of a therapist. I was just like, you know, I was like, they had so much.
That's to a get, whole another movie. Yeah. Right?
They had so much that they wanted to get out, and just like, you know, and some of them, it took them a little time to like build that trust or whatever. But over the years, or whatever. So like all through 2006, I'm working that up, and I'm doing all the, you know, these interviews, or whatever, and I'm like, yeah, there's definitely something here, and it's this big. You know, in scope story, and it would start like in 1978 and would go up to 2005, and there's six main characters and maybe a seventh with their manager and all this other kind of stuff. And so I'm interviewing them, and then everybody like who would go on the record, who was like part of their world, like, you know, the guy who owned their record ran their record label, the bodyguards, like anybody who would talk. And it was just, you know, no money. It was just like, let's just see. And we ended up, God, man, it's so crazy. But like right around that time, we took it out. Like kind of a caravan pitch, and we had all these. We went all over town, everywhere. Like for both, because we saw it as a feature. Like initially, although from that first conversation I had with Ricky and Mike, they were like, you know, Mike was like, "Yeah, we want to do this. It's like a mini series, you know, like what the Jacksons got, and the Temptations got." Yeah. And I was like, you know, he was like, "Yeah, you know, we feel out. You know, our story is like that." And you know, I was like, "Okay, you know, mini series, right?" But everybody else was pushing like feature. So I crafted it as a feature, even though it would have been like super dense. And we took it out and sold. And, you know, so our big strategy was we'll bring the guys with us, right, in the room. And so, like, you go to these meetings and, like, every staff member would, like, want to come. And, you know, we purposely didn't invite Bobby because Bobby was a bit of a wild card.
I was just about to say, who came to these meetings?
Everybody else but Bobby.
Okay, interesting.
And you know, the other thing is now it's, like, common knowledge because, you know, they've all interviewed about it. But Bobby was the only one that didn't sign his life rights. Mm-hmm. The rest of them did because Bobby wanted more money.
Of course.
And so, you know, so one of the first places we took it to was BET. My good friend now, Reggie Hudlin, was running BET at the time, and like,
I'm working with him now.
Yeah, so am I. so Reggie told us in the room, you know, it's all of us, and I pitched this whole thing, and he goes, "Listen, I understand you guys are going to take it other places, but we are making this movie, right? Take it wherever you got to take it, but we're going to make this movie." I said, "All right," and we took it to, you know, basically every studio we went, and networks, like, you know, like VH1 and all this other kind of stuff, and so got a lot of passes. You know what I mean? Like, people liked it. They were really down, but they just passed. And ultimately, what we ended up doing was BET was like, "Well, we'll come on." They wanted to launch this thing called BET Films, like what MTV Films had been.
Right.
And so they were like, "We'll be the production entity on it, and we'll set it up at a studio." And we ended up setting it up at Paramount Vantage, which no longer exists.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, like, that was like the indie label of Paramount, right? Before Paramount Players. So we set that up. That was in, I remember, because it was the final, it was around the finals of like 2007, and I had to do this pitch, but I was like trying to race home to see the Cavs. You know what I mean? LeBron's first finals and shit. It's so funny. 2007, if you know the industry, there was a fucking storm coming that I just, at the time, like, I was riding super high. I sold lottery ticket, and now I set fucking New Edition story up at Paramount, and just like, you know, money in the bank, just got married a couple years ago, like, shit was going great. And then my guild fucked me hard.
but
You know, but hey, but ultimately, for, I mean, I couldn't see it at the time. I was like, why? Why are you
playing me? Why are you playing me? Why are you playing me?
But I
6 months, motherfucker.
Yeah, and so what the upshot of that was, Paramount grew cold on New Edition, especially because we couldn't lock down all the life rights. And, you know, so when the strike was over, I remember going back to my executive at the time, and he was just like, nah, it's not going to happen. I was like, oh, shit. I was like, is there anything we could do? And they just grew cold on it. And then BET had regime changes. Reggie stepped down or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it just went into this 10-year limbo. Wow. And during that time.
That's why I want to bring it up, because I knew it was 10 years.
Yeah. During that time, though, you know, Jesse and I just kept like, so I just was, he was like, well, listen, man, you got this fucking great treatment. Like, can you just, you know, write a script? Like, I think we can get, you know, we could sell it just somewhere else, like based on this, and we'll work on getting the rights out or whatever out of Paramount. So I wrote my draft of it. And this is the funny. So I, you know, when we went into production, like he saved all my old emails and shit. I remember writing Act One, and, this is as I'm, you know, sometimes as a writer, like when you're in the draft, you realize like, oh shit, like, you know what I mean? Like it's becoming its own beast,
it's
right?
It's gonna get big.
I was writing it and I was like, my act one was like 100 pages, right? and I was like, I didn't want to give it to him. He was like pressing me, like, can I see the pages? And so I remember writing this long email, like before, you know, as I sent it with him, I was like, listen, I said, okay, this is ridiculously long. It's stupid long, okay? But it makes a lot more sense. Like, the more I've written it, I realize this is not a feature. This is a miniseries. So act one, think of it as night one. Mm. Act two will be night two. Act Love three that. Will be night three. And so, you know, because I was like, if we try to go out with this as a feature, like, people will laugh at us. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so I wrote, that was, you know, I'm writing this. I can't even remember what year that was. I remember, like, it was like, I think around 2009. Mm-hmm. And then my draft was ready in 2010. And then I wrote draft after draft. Reggie Hudlin, who always was passionate about it, came back on. Mm-hmm. He was going to direct it. So and then he was like, no, we got to get it tighter as a feature. And I took this huge, massive script and I got it down to like, I don't know, 120 pages.
Oh my God.
But it would have read like Wikipedia. Okay, Candy Girl, cool it now. Blah, blah, blah. Exactly. BBD, blah, blah, blah. Breakup, makeup,
plot.
Over.
Yeah, plot,
and
plot.
That would have been it, right?
Exactly.
But, you know, but again, I had put so much sweat equity in this. I just wanted to get it made, right? But ultimately, gosh, what happened? So, like, you know, and it wasn't like I worked on it steadily all the time. Mm-hmm. I was taking other jobs. I was doing, you know what I mean? Yeah, it was like on my off time, mm-hmm. essentially, right? And every time Jesse would come around, and I would be bothering the shit out of him. Like, I'd be like, any movement? Anything happening? You know what I mean? Like Spike and the little dog from the Warner Brothers. You know what I mean? Spike, you know, are we going to make New Edition story? And so, you know, and he was just like, you know, working away. And in the meantime, like, getting his weight up, you know what I mean, as a producer a bit. And finally, around 2013, like, we started getting a little bit momentum. Stephen Hill took over as head of programming at BET. Stephen Hill is to this day a huge New Edition fan. And he was like, and he had been there as an executive when we first brought it in. And he was like, I want to make this shit. So I remember, I think somewhere around 2014, Jesse and I went in for a meeting. He was like, I'm about to have the power. And he's just like, we're going to make, not only are we going to make this, we're going to do it as a miniseries, 3 nights, 2 hours each night. And he's like, get it.
Exactly what you wanted.
That's exactly what I wanted. By 2015, the deal was made. I was off and running. So I had to basically, you know, get this in TV format, you know what I mean? With commercial breaks and shit like that, which it wasn't meant for. That's what was, you know, but yeah. So when people ask, like, why did New Edition Story take, you know, 10 years to get made? And I'm like, because of God's will.
It was for the best. It sounds like though.
It was because and the other thing that you did, the luxury that you never get, is I had all that time to really deep dive into characters and story and every angle that you could take story wise. Like, we tried it. I was like, what if we did it this way? What if we did it that way? So by the time we were in production or whatever, and, like, you know, director comes on and, like, Any possible scenario you could have to skin that cat, we'd already tried it, and I could say, this is why this works best, or this is why this won't work, or whatever it was. But you never get that. Unless you write a novel, you don't get that much time to develop anything. Right. New Edition benefited because I had been in New Edition world for 10 years.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And obviously did much more interviews, and I interviewed each guy, like, multiple times, and their family members, and just
everybody that you basically that was alive that you could talk to that was in that movie, I talked to them. You know what I mean? And by the time it went, like, it was just, it was still, you know, production had its own challenges and shit like that. It was tough. It was super tough. But now that's the thing that I'm most known for. And it's, you know, I used to tell people before it happened in the days when I was
before
trying to work it out.
Before he won that motherfucker award, hey, he won last week.
I would tell people, I was like, if I die and what I'm known for, I was the guy that wrote the New Edition story, right, I'd be good with that. Now that it's made, I don't want to die yet. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's like a few more things I want to do. But I was so proud of it.
We still got to do Curtis Blow, don't we?
You were right. Yeah. You know,
I'm gonna tell you this. You know, like, I saw the excitement in your eyes when you first got that shot.
Yeah,
and I just would watch like every permutation, you know, and over the years that you were developing me, you know, like, you would tell me about it. You got really busy, a lot of things, a lot of crazy things happening, you know, you got your daughter, all this kind of stuff. But I remember we went to your house to watch it that night.
And right,
it,
night one.
And it was so, I was so excited to see it.
Yeah.
Because I knew the work you put in, I knew what it meant to you, you know, also not just that it meant something to you as like a story that you spent working. I know you're a big fan of that era with the music because you grew up with it, you know, and it's like, it's a whole different thing that it was just such a great experience just to watch. Like, when his credit came on the screen, I was like, dude, you stop that, I want to get that photo. There's very few things in this business where people who you start off with and you watch them grow and all the hits everyone takes, and when you see that moment with something that's such a, and it's also such a great piece of work, you know, like, it's such a really smart thing. There's all those little stories. It's paced really, really well. The kids,
the kids
were great. Yeah. Just the cat. I mean, the break between each night was great. So it was just very much. It was great for me to see someone, because one thing, you see people that you know, that you follow, but I've known you for so long,
right?
And I just like to see this type of success, and then everything's going on, and to watch it sit. I think people always, like you said, people get so tied up in wanting it quick, you know.
Yeah,
and I get why you want it quick, because the one thing about getting it quick is, it's like you said, like at the time that, you know, that you left Broadway Video, it's like, I gotta get something on because I need this money. I need this money, and that's why you want to quit, because you want to be able to work on stuff that you really love.
It was that, and it was also, dog, I felt like I was seeing my peers that, you know, I graduated with from college, and they're like starting families and buying houses, and here I am living in a little fucking one, you know, with the Murphy bed out the wall, and I was thinking to myself, like, and everybody's like, oh man, we're so proud of you, and I was like, proud of what? Like, what am I doing?
Yeah. I ain't all the time. I'm like, what are you talking about?
You know, they like, the folk, we're from the Midwest or whatever, and like, you know, the life that they imagine that you have and what you really have, like, yeah, I might know some famous people or whatever, but I ain't fucking living in those.
I'm not on Malibu
Beverly
chilling,
Park, you know? Like, you know, so a lot of it was just like, I was like, I'm gonna be out here with nothing to show for it. That's what I kept thinking to myself, you know what I mean? All these years and you know, never make my mark. So like, when Lottery Ticket got done, at least I like, that was a huge thing for me, because I was like, at least I can say that, if, you know, I came out here and I did, I won't be one of those writers who just like made a good living but never had anything that anybody could see. You know what I mean? And
you guys were nominated for that too, right?
No, we weren't. Lottery Ticket, it wasn't.
No, I meant a New Edition.
Yeah, New Edition won Image Award, and I won you know, Best Writer for a limited series. So
two in a row, motherfucker.
Well, no, Bobby won for best. I wasn't nominated for writing for this one, but listen, I was a producer on it. I
take that.
Listen,
give me that other award. I'm gonna be on stage and everything. Yeah. So.
And I'm not. You know, it was you know, tough competition this year. You know what I'm saying? But like, I just appreciate any, just the fact that people dug it. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I really like. But I want to say this too, also, just in terms of, because one of the things, like, I remember, you know, when we were talking earlier about the Mighty Ducks and shit like that, one of the things in my IMDb, if you look at it, people go, I have a credit, and this is true, I wrote this movie, an animated movie for Sony Animation called, I'm going to straight up,
Surfs Up 2 Wave Mania. Okay? People say lottery ticket, Bobby Brown story, New Edition story, and Surfs Up 2, the movie about surfing penguins. How'd that happen? And I'm going to tell you exactly how it happened. Okay? Because your writing journey can take a lot of fucking ways, right?
So, you got to pivot sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this was a time I had to pivot. So lottery ticket comes out. Like after the strike, we finally did. Rogue got, they weren't interested in making urban comedies anymore. It's so funny just how all of a sudden everybody was just change their business.
None of that black stuff anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Basically, they were. So, and I was like, oh, shit, that's never going to happen. And then my managers managed to set it up at Alcon. Mm. And Alcon was like, you know, they wanted to do it and they had their own financing and whatever. We were like, great. And I can tell this story too. So, Eric had and if you talk to him, ask him, I would really be curious to see what he says about it too. But Eric had the lottery ticket was originally written for Chris Brown. It was going to be a Chris Brown vehicle.
I do think he told me that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Eric had a relationship with Chris, like directed all of his early videos, knew his mom, whatever, like knew him from like a kid, right? And Chris had a lot of heat at this time. Mm-hmm. Like, as long as we've been in the business, everybody's been trying to find the next Will Smith. Right, I remember when it was going to be Nick Cannon. You know what I mean? There's been a lot of people young talent.
They tried to shoehorn it.
And they've just been saying, like, who's going to be that next big, you know? And so for a while, people thought it could be.
He was on that trajectory until he pulled that bullshit.
Right.
He was right there.
Let me tell you. Yeah. So basically, we set it up. They get it out of Rogue. Mm-hmm. Alcon does. So by the end of 2008. And I'm like, great, we're going to do it at Alcon. Hmm. With Chris Brown, the character was named Chris and everything, right? and so everything is going good and we're trying to like figure out like what are the other elements because they're not going to greenlight it with just Chris, whatever, like if we could maybe find like one other thing.
Yeah. With that Ice Cube story you
right,
told us.
And then everything's going great. And then Grammy weekend 2009 happens.
Oh boy.
And then like I wake up one day and I look at it and I see like this him and Rihanna like in the car somewhere in Hancock Park and all this kind of shit. And the movie go whoop, you know, like just like that. It was done. Right? Like Chris Brown becomes toxic, like nobody they're not gonna fuck with him. Eventually, like Screen Gems did and other things, and he's like resurrected his career in his own way. But in terms of our shit, it was done. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, God, I just can't win for losing. That's what I was thinking at the time. I was like, you know, apart from how I feel about what happened between them, but I was just like, God, can I just get a fucking break?
Right.
You know what I mean? And, you know, like.
I love this shit because people need to hear it. It ain't easy.
It's not easy. I mean, it's like.
And you're a working writer. It ain't easy.
It's like the goalpost is moving.
All the
it's
time.
It's never, there's you know, no goalpost. It's
time New Edition story had fallen apart. Like right. I had, you know.
10 years.
So, you know, eventually, obviously, I'm meeting with this guy, Carl Rogers at Alcon. We're having a lunch at somewhere, and we're just talking. And he really liked it. He's like, I don't want to let this go. We're just talking, blah blah blah. And I don't remember if it probably wasn't me. It was probably him. He said, "What about Lil Bow Wow?" And I was like, "Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, maybe. You know what I mean?" And then and he was like, "You know how many Twitter followers that guy has? You know what I mean?" And so like they were like, that's when around the time they started looking at that casting, people would look at that like what your following was. And you know, Bow Wow shit was just like massive, right? And so he takes that back at Alcon, and that got them excited. And they're like, oh, you know, but now there's like, well, you know, if they were like, we ain't gonna make it with just him, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was like, well, the whole thing, my whole concept for Lottery Ticket, the way that I even wrote it was, it was in the tradition of things like
Batman World,
Uptown Saturday Night, mm-hmm. Car Wash, Harlem Nights, where you would take like, let's get like top comedians and just put them all in, you know what I mean? And like I envisioned what the poster would look like and all this kind of shit, you know? And so I was like, it won't all be on his shoulders. He's the straight man. The comedy's going to come from everybody that you surround him with, right? And that's, you know, and without, I'm going to get to Surf's Up too, but whatever, but basically it was, you know, teetering on the brink, man. I mean, like, I remember an executive I heard one time said, like, a movie is like a patient on an ER table who wants to die, and you just got to keep doing the fucking jaws of life. You know what I mean? So we somebody had brought up Ice Cube as an idea, and we were basically like, any role you want, dude, anything, just cue and choose, anything you want, you know what I mean? And we thought that he would want to be like the villain or whatever, but he was like, no, the old man, the boxer. And I was like, really? He's like, you know, so I was like, yeah, great, cool. I remember, I tell this story sometimes, Kevin Hart auditioned 3 times for Lottery Ticket.
three times. And Eric and I laugh about this to this day because Kevin and I were both rep by UTA, and I remember his agent would tell me, it's like, Kevin Hart. I was like, you ain't gonna tell me I'm a fan. Like, from his stand-up, I was a fan, right? And so, you know, I would see, I wasn't in the room for the auditions, but I would see his tape. I was like, he's killing it, right? Like, he was gonna be the villain. I had written the villain as like a short guy with like a Napoleon complex, right? Like, who terrorizes this project. And like, yeah, dog, it was tailor-made for him.
It's him or Cat Williams, that's it, right?
Cat was the other name that was who Alcon really liked, but Cat like wouldn't read it. You know, he just is like, he was just hard to get a hold of. And Kevin like really wanted it or whatever, and Alcon just is like, eh. And I was like, I'm telling y'all, y'all making a mistake. You know what I mean? And I would tell, and I've worked on something, you know, later with Alcon that was supposed to be for Kevin. And I was like, see, you remember? You know what I mean? But, you know, but you know, so the long story short is, so we, you know, when Ice Cube signed on, that's when our movie got greenlit. Right. Like, when he signed on, and then dominoes fell. Then we got, like, actors we shouldn't have been able to get. You know what I mean? Keith David.
Who's his mom?
Loretta Devine.
That's right.
Loretta, grandmother. Yeah. She was grandmother.
Grandmother, yeah.
Keith David, Terry Crews, Mike Epps does a cameo. You know what I mean? Like, just, you know, we got just got this great fucking guy, Tori Naughton now from, you know, from Power. You know what I mean? Like, we, you know, we just, it just, the stars lined up. You know what I mean? And the movie came out. And it did well. It made its money back, but it wasn't like Friday. It wasn't like no smash. You know what I mean? And so, basically, I remember my reps telling me, it was like, listen, you know, like, I was like, well, what is this going to do for me? You know what I mean? And they go, well, if it had been, you know, I'm going to just tell you honestly, if it had done really, really great numbers, yeah, you'd, you know, quote would have shot up and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it was like, but it got basically on base. It wasn't a home run. It got on base, you know?
Made their money back.
Yeah. What it ended up doing is lottery ticket, which none of us anticipated, became like this favorite on cable. It comes on like, I mean, it's
DVD and all that.
Yeah, it's, yeah, DVD too, but really cable is what made it. Like, it's finally started to taper off, but for 10 solid years, lottery ticket on TBS and BET and, you know, and whatever else shows it, it's just like, I don't know what it is. People just found it. You know what I mean? Like,
green envelope. Green envelope.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know what? I'll say this because I, at the time when that came out, I was working at that Completion Bond Company. And I remember you and Chip went to the premiere. And Chip was saying, you know, he was anticipating that the movie would do well. I think you were telling me, too, that it was like, it was one of the top pirated movies or some shit like that.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody's bootlegging.
Bootlegging the fuck out of that.
Yeah, we got. But there was somebody at the premiere. Somebody at the premiere came and told me, he's like, I just saw your movie up on Crenshaw. Like, at the premiere, they told me that. I was like,
But I remember when I first saw it.
Hey, never getting that negative. Like, just fucking
get hey, man.
I think I was at home. And I mean, I saw it on TNT, and on TNT, it was you know, I mean, I think I saw it in the theater, but TNT would play it. You know, they would choose these movies and they play them like three times a day. You know, like I think they're trying to hit the different time zones.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I was like, oh, well, the motherfucker's gonna be watching the shit out of this movie,
right. Yeah.
Because I said the movies that get this kind of like slots are like a Die Hard or something like that.
Yeah, I'm gonna tell you honestly, it came as just a shock. I had no idea it was gonna have this kind of life and that people would like it as much as they did. You know what I mean? But they did. Thank God. And like you said, green envelopes, bro. I've been eating off a lottery ticket for a long time.
I heard that.
So
where my 10%, by the way.
Right. But here's the thing though. And it wasn't just because of that, but just the business in general. For a little while there, they just weren't fucking with urban comedies. And they still don't, not theatrically.
Right.
Not really. Right. You know? So there was
Tyler Perry shit, but that's it.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But like there was, you know, like Jumping the Broom did well, and you know what I mean? Like and Just Right and whatever. There was a time when you remember like those movies like Screen Gems and, you know, Fox Searchlight, whatever, that's who would make those shit. But it just was a cooling period around 2010-11 where they weren't getting made. So and that was what I was known for. I was, you know what I mean? Like, New Edition hadn't, was years away from happening. So I was known as a black comedy writer. Right. And the jobs just weren't there. The writing assignments weren't there. No, you know, the spec ideas. Like, I was developing things or whatever, but like, it just, it, you know, it was tough sledding. And my wife and I, you know, I was, you know, getting writing assignments or whatever. So I was keeping the bills paid or whatever. But my wife and I had our daughter in 2012, and you know, then like I'm in pregnancy vortex for a while. And I'm saying, you know, whatever. After that, after she's born, newborn, whatever, no sleep, all that kind of thing. But you know, like everything's still cool. I booked this job at Screen Gems, and then Clint Culpepper, I'll call him out.
Oh, Clint, yeah.
Fuck it, you know. He it was another one. He said, yeah, remember I told you Harvey Weinstein went one draft of Bling, and Clint Culpepper
he read Act One of this script. It was Will Packer was a producer on it, and a few other people, and Tracy Edmonds, who I'd been friends with for a long time. He read Act One and decided not to do it off of that Act One. And I was telling, you know, my executives there, I was like, listen, you know, like, you know, I don't want to just send it act by act. Can I wait? Because, like, you have to see how it's all going to, you know, pay off. And they were like, this is how we do it here. Hmm. He sees it act by act. So I sent it in. He goes, eh. And then that was it.
Wow.
The upshot of that was, and I got a newborn daughter at home, I didn't get the full value of that contract, like, because it was just in limbo. They didn't pass on it.
Right.
They just he just decided we're not moving forward right now. And it was just in limbo. And that was the only paying gig I had at the time.
Hmm.
So I had gotten my commencement check, and that's all I got. Now we're that's towards the end of, you know, the year. Now we're getting into 2013. I'm like, well, I know me. I always book. You know what I mean? I'll be fine. You know, I'll just go up for some more stuff. And it was just like, I was asking my reps. I was like, what do we got? You know, what's coming? And they were like, there's just not a lot out there right now. Like, nobody's developing anything that you would be right for.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, and I'm trying to buy my time, and of course, I'm like working on specs, and I've got, you know, other things. I'm like, hey, I'll just do some rainmaking. I'll just make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
But my wife was not working at the time. She was transitioning to another area of law. We had a newborn. I had my savings in the bank, but it just started, like, as 2013 goes on and on and on.
Fast, dude.
It was going. Mm-hmm. It was going, and I was getting panicky and shit. And I remember, like, I had a lunch with my now manager, but he was my agent at the time in 2013. And he goes, and I mean, you know, I was like, what am I going to do, John? You know, and he was like, listen, man. He's like, you know, you have to just accept the reality. Like, the genre that you're known for, it's like, it's, you know, it's cooling off now. He's like, but you just had a baby. He's like, I know you. I know you're human. He's like, you know what I think you could do? Have you ever thought about doing something in the family space? He's like, because those jobs never go away. Like, there's always
hashtag pivot again.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And he was just like, he's like, you know, would you think about something in animation? And I was like, yeah. I mean, if you think somebody would hire me, like, why would they hire me based on what I got? But right. I was like, yeah, why not?
Right.
He put me up for this job. He's like, you know, Sony is going to do, it's going to do direct to DVD. They have this big hit, Surf's Up, whatever, Jeff Bridges, you know, Shia LaBeouf, all this stuff, and they want to do, they're partnering with WWE, and they're going to do a thing like to, you know, basically just, you know, this is what they do now, right? So it'll be released to streaming and DVD, and I went up and I pitched for it, and they hired me, and that was like towards, shit, what year was that now? I think that was in like 2014. I pulled myself out because I booked a Disney Channel job also in 2013, and that, you know, basically, and then by 2014 or whatever. But, like, again, money was dry, you know, all this kind of stuff. I was bone dry, dog. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
With a newborn baby, feeling like the biggest failure in the fucking world.
Wow.
You know, and that's when you realize as a writer, you go, I ain't got no fallback plan. I put all my eggs in this shit. Like,
everything.
If I had to put a resume together now, what could I say that I do? Like, you see lottery tickets?
I can type 70 words a minute, maybe.
No, like, I was like, and the only other job experience I'd had since college was in development. And, like, I can't be, like, a produce writer. And, like, and then, plus, there weren't even development jobs to do. There was nothing. I was panicked, bro. You know what I mean? I don't even think I told y'all all this. I was very fucking panicked. Mm-hmm. And all I was thinking about was, I got to, like, you know, be able to feed my kid. You know what I mean?
Bro, it's a huge burden. That's the wrong word. It's a huge, it's the duty for you to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You, if you have a child, you have to do everything you can to give the child the life that you anticipated.
Right.
Because it's not like you and Ray just, oh shit, we're pregnant right now. It's like, you guys just plan that.
I was 40 when she was born.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we waited. Yeah. We did everything the right way. School and then establish your career and all this other kind of shit. So the bottom line was, I had to open my mind up and say that, get out of your comfort zone. Who says you can't write for, like, so when I remember meeting a Disney Channel and they told me, like, well, how their movies go or whatever. That project was this thing I was writing. It was a vehicle for Dwight Howard.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that ultimately didn't go. it didn't go, but it was great experience.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really cool execs, you know, that I got to be friends with there. One of them, I'm working on something now. She's now transitioned to Warner Brothers and I have a project there and she's my exec on it. You know what I mean? But, like, that's how I met her.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went up for the Sony job in 2014 and I got that. And, like, you know, not great money, but enough to, like, keep my head above water while I keep things going. And as I've told y'all earlier in the conversation, also around that time, that's when I found out New Edition was going.
Mm.
And so by 2015, you know, New Edition goes,
then the money starts flowing, mm-hmm. and you know it became what it became and whatever, and like so now I'm in a you know in a much better position than I was, but right. like even you know this is what people don't realize, man. Like the business can be fickle, and even when you've had some success, just because you got to produce credit, that I mean, you know what I mean, and even if you're getting residuals and shit, you know, yeah, unless it was like some massive hit, and even then, you know, if you're living above your means, if you're you know what I mean,
lifestyle changes too.
Well, it's the thing that we talked about this offline a bunch of times. I mean, before is that. You kind of brought this up a little earlier. It's like you got the lottery ticket at a time when there's the bootlegging is huge, you know, and also at that same time the DVD market is contracting.
I know,
even when it's big.
Eric and I said if that movie had come out in the 90s and did it the same, I mean, like the numbers would have been because everybody bought. You know, VHS and DVD back then, you know what I mean? Yeah. And like, you know, there was bootlegging, but not to the extent,
you know, on your way out the door, you was buying one.
I want to ask you something about that. I don't know if I should about that trailer situation, but.
Oh, you can now. Oh, I mean, everything's fine.
So this is, okay. So.
There's more water. You good?
Okay. So Eric and Abdul get a trailer cut.
Eric did it. It was Eric.
Yeah. That the studio gives them, and it's booty, you know. And then
our first trailer.
Yeah. And then you said that Eric went and recut a trailer to show them.
Yeah. How it should.
This is how it should look.
Yeah. His brother is an editor, right? Yeah. So they now again. Eric comes from the world of music videos.
He got an eye too.
He knows how to grab your attention right from the jump. Right. How to like. You know, what is a trailer, right? How to tell a story visually, how to, you know, and he had cut a trailer. To this day, I have it saved on my computer because I'm like, that shit was so fucking hot. And it was like, it was, you know, yeah, tonally it was different, but I remember them saying, the studio saying like, people are going to think this is like a drama. But I was like, well, if you watch the movie, there are some dramatic elements in it. There's that rooftop scene, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, let's not undersell it. Yeah, the whole conceit of the movie is, a kid wins the lottery in the hood. Right. You know what I mean? The hood comes with its own obstacles.
In the project.
Yeah, in the project, right? We shot it in a project.
You sure did.
You know what I'm saying? And so I was like, you know, it can't be some, at least we weren't going to let it be some silly, like, you know, flippant kind of movie. It was really supposed to be like the whole, my conceit for it was like, to whom much is given, much is required. So he realizes over the course of this weekend, it's like, what, you know, what if I just use this money that, like, what we thought was an insane amount of money at the time. I remember saying like $370 million, like, you know, the fucking Powerball now is like five, but I was like, I remember telling Aaron, like, man, is that too much? No one's gonna believe you could win. but you know what I'm saying? So like, so he cut a trailer that was, you know, and I remember
there was this whole contention because I think that you were saying that Eric had, there was like some older white guy. He was at the studio who was cutting it, and they were like, "No, hold on, you ain't getting nothing."
They had a certain way that they did shit or whatever. And I mean, do I think that would have been a difference between a bigger opening or not? I don't know. It's hard to say. I also wasn't crazy about our poster. You know what I mean?
Our
poster was just like, it was like a gray background. I mean, like, you know, it's water under the bridge now, right? It is what it is. But also, when you're a young writer and it's your first movie, you don't get to say. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean?
And it was his first movie.
Yeah, it was his first movie. So we were like, we were two newbies, you know, coming in or whatever. And like, you know, none of these decisions were done to like undercut anything. No. It was just, they had a way that they had a marketing strategy. That, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And everything from the music that was chosen for the trailer and everything to what we thought, younger, hipper, you know, whatever. Now, when you have the great position that I'm in now is now people will listen. Right. You know what I mean? Now I can say, get that exec producer. You know what I mean? So like I have a say in how things are presented and like what the strategy is going to be and all that kind of stuff. But you have to earn that, you know, credit. When you're young in the game, you got to kind of just, you know, roll with the punches. But you know, pay attention and learn. And also, you also can't be the dude who's like constantly telling everybody, you're wrong, you fucked up, whatever. Like marketing execs have been doing it forever. Mm-hmm. Like know when to speak up and know when to shut up. You know what I mean? So I think I've found that balance. I mean, nobody's, at least if they think I'm full of shit, no one's told me.
No, you got a good reputation.
I mean,
we know the bullshit.
Yeah, y'all know I'm full of shit. But you know, I mean, but the, you know.
But there's a friend of mine. He did a movie. He wrote it. His friend directed it. And this is like in the late '90s. And he took the opposite approach. The director was just fucking up. And the editor pulled the writer because the director and the writer had been close friends for a long time. The editor was like, "Dude, you gotta like." you have to rein your boy in because everyone is not liking what he's saying.
Right, right.
And it's just an interesting kind of thing where it's like, even though he directed it and he write it, they still trying to like massage it to make it like work right. well. Because right. I think a lot of times people get lost in it, you yeah, know? Yeah. And then these outside people who are part, I mean, the marketing people aren't, this, at a certain level, they don't care about your movie because it's just a product to them to sell. They don't. Right. I mean, they didn't write it,
right?
And
right,
they
didn't
spend any time on it.
Right.
So sometimes their perspective is interesting to listen to, and sometimes it might be right. There's lots of this right. I always feel that, you know, nobody cuts trailers right. You know, that's my feeling because I've watched the trailer and I'm like, I don't need to see this movie now. Or right. are two missing? I was like, you know what? I want to see this, so stop. I'm gonna stop right now.
Stop right now before you tell me too much.
Because yeah. you yeah. know, and obviously I've shown I have a fucked up memory. But the minute I see an image in a trailer, in my head when I'm watching the movie, I'm like, when's that image gonna show up?
Yeah.
Oh, Andrew, right. you don't forget.
When's right. that? You know, I saw him shooting. So you know, he's in this room. Yeah. So the minute that happens, the minute we get to that space in the room, I see that geography. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, it's just gonna happen.
Right.
Yeah. Because I've seen it. You yeah. know?
It's right. kind of like when you're watching. You're like, I'm still a Walking Dead fan, believe it or not. Mm. But I watch the show, and then it looks like a zombie ate somebody or somebody got shot, and then the next. They show the trailer and you see them like in the background. I'm like, y'all didn't know they was in the background. Now I can see that they made it.
Oh, right, yeah. right, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah,
it's like
yeah,
some bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. That, yeah.
I
yeah.
want nobody. I the marketing is so.
It's own beast, man.
Yeah, I get they're trying to get everyone like interested and attracted, and they're trying to like to break through the noise. But I still kind of feel like. You know, I used to say this all the time when we were living together. I used to say, I don't want anything from the third act in the trailer. I don't want anything in the third act in the trailer. But you see it all the time now. It's just like, God damn, man. Like, well, I mean, like my ultimate enjoyment of the movie is what happens in the third act.
Right.
Because if it falls apart, then the movie didn't work.
Right.
Yep. You know, if it comes together really well with some twist, that is what makes you go, oh shit, did you remember? Mm-hmm. Because that's what you remember. I mean, like we were talking about Jaws earlier, and it's like when the shark blows up and your boy's stuck in the cage, and it's like, that's what you remember.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, no doubt.
Hey, Abdul, let me ask you a question. So clearly you went from New Edition, you did a bunch of other stuff, and then you went to currently Bobby Brown.
Right.
Right. To me, you are the perfect person to write that movie.
Thank you.
Who knows him better than you?
Right. Yeah.
You feel me?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, duh. They'd be stupid to go out to somebody else.
Yeah.
You have to redevelop that whole relationship all over again.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean? So what was the transition like?
That was basically, Bobby had been wanting to do his own movie, right? That was part of the bone. Exactly. That's Bobby Brown, right? That's part of the bone in contention. You know what I mean? Like when he, you know, so he had to kind of be brought around like, look, if we do New Edition, you know what I mean? Like you'll have a much better chance of getting yours made. Right. And then New Edition becomes, you know, 30 million viewers and it becomes this big thing. And so I think like when some First Night's number came in, like BET was like, all right, what's next? What are we doing next, guys?
Right.
So they knew like kind of like right away.
He's like, just so happened. I already started on
it. It would have been great if they had made that decision that the fall before fall of 2016 to give me a little bit more time. Yeah. But so basically they, you know, like very shortly after, you know, like the movie comes out in January 2017. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Jesse gets the call, then Jesse calls me so that by like, I think we go in February and by March I'm in it.
Right.
So, but here's the thing for Bobby. They knew what the air date, what they wanted it to be. They knew the air date was going to be September 2018.
Wow.
So I had to work, you know, so like New Edition where I get 10 years, you know what I mean? So like to develop and, you know, deep dive or whatever. Now, even though Bobby was part of New Edition, he had a whole life beyond their shit. And so I still had to do my process. I still had to do the interviews. I still had to do all the research. I still had, you know, whatever, but just in a very much more compressed space because it was like, you know, we're greenlit already. You know what I mean? Like, the only way they wouldn't have made it is if the draft came in completely fucked up. But they, you know, but like they knew me, right? Mm-hmm. So I get off and running. And you know, the first, I remember, and I've had this, you know, conversation like a few times, like, do I want to be the biopic guy? Is that, you know what I mean? And my manager would be like, you know, until like, as long as you like the story, as long as you like it, until, you know, people stop asking, why not? You know what I mean? Like, you know, and you know, you, that doesn't mean you can't do other stuff, but like, if a project comes along and it's good and you want to do it, don't just not do it just because it's in that genre, right? You know, you obviously have proven yourself there and people want you for that. So I get offered a ton of music biopics. And I'm, you know, become like selective of like, it's all the stars have got to align. So Bobby, man, it was cool because I'd had that head start. I knew him already. Mm-hmm. So he was comfortable talking to me and then like the other people in his world and stuff like that. And, you know, they'd had other challenges the New Edition didn't have in that one of the biggest characters in the movie is Whitney Houston, who had, you know, since passed away. Right. And I had to be able to write her voice and I had to and know that because of Bobby's relationship with her family, I wasn't going to be able to get her side, essentially. Right. You know what I mean? I had to be fair. Mm-hmm. So it was, it was tough. And the pace was like, you know what I mean? Like I didn't have a shitload of time, but I got enough to get my stuff done. And then, you know, I think my first draft, I turned into like August or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then it was just like, we were just off to the races. Okay, and nice. So we were in production by the following spring, you know, pre-production by January and then production by the following spring. And then, you know, just work. Mm-hmm. But it was dope. It was a great experience. And now, you know, like that's what I was saying, when we won Image Award, it was just like a nice end to that chapter. We're all very happy about it. I was happy for Bobby.
I saw that picture, all you guys.
Yeah.
That was nice.
You know, I mean, here's the thing, and this is the great thing about it, is you know, when you write about these artists, like you have to have a certain amount of detachment because you're writing about them and you got to be fair. You're not trying to write like a fluff piece. Right. You know what I mean? At the same time, you get to know them. You get to know their families and their kids or whatever. And like, it does become, so like, I've, New Edition.
You get to unveil a curtain a little bit.
Right? New Edition, they'll always have a place in my life and I'll always have a place in theirs, and Bobby's, you know, the same. And it's wonderful when it works out that way. There might be times when I do something where it's not that way and it's just like, we just did a job together and that's it, you know, but I've been fortunate that I've gotten to know them and we'll always be cool, you know?
Yeah, well, you know what? I mentioned, because I talk with Scott all the time, Scott Alexander, who did the, you know, and I ran into him the other week and he's doing the Dolomite story, you know?
Yes?
It's coming out.
Yeah, it's done.
It's done. They said it last year. It's coming out. It was supposed to come out this month, but they loved Eddie's performance so much that Netflix is going to put it for the awards.
They try to push it a bit.
They really think he's. They said it's all,
he's due.
I mean, it's not just that he's due.
Totally.
It's not just that he's due. But Scott was like, it's everything you want in Eddie and more.
Yeah.
Good. You know, so we're getting old so Eddie and new Eddie.
I was talking to him about the same thing about, you know, it's like you know, like you guys do these biopics, you're so known for that. He was like, yeah, but you know, there's a few things on the resume that aren't, you know, like he did like a Stephen King adaptation and things like that. And it's like, but like he and Larry are so in that space. And they kind of choose these weird angles that they get to choose stuff that's very interesting, you know, and stuff that maybe, you know, off of first glance, someone say, ain't no one making that movie.
Right.
But then you go, yeah, but we got the guy who fucking did New Edition, Bobby Brown. We can make that movie, that movie now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because people know something can be done that maybe seems a little difficult to do, you know, like, because obviously you're up here wrestling with all these personalities,
right?
Which is a big thing. I mean, it's hard to wrestle with one person's personality with the family. You got
all superstars.
Yeah, the thing about biopics, man, is like you're a writer, but you also have to be a bit of a reporter.
Yes.
You're like an investigative journalist. You know what I mean? Like that's part of it. And I don't mind doing the work. Like I like to dive in. I like all the research. I can't do enough interviews. You know what I mean? Like the project that I'm doing now, Salt and Pepper, has another super fast clock on it. And the struggle I'm having is I don't know if I'm going to get the time I want. You know what I mean? You know, so that like you can become like, and boy, I hope I don't sound like I'm crying crocodile tears and shit, but you can become a prisoner of your own success where like if you've proved that you can do it a couple times, then people are like, oh, you don't need all that time. Just do it. Just bang it out. You know what I mean? And I'm like, no, I really do. Like I'm just as insecure as I was in 2003 sometimes. You know what I mean? Like I want that safety net of like, give me the time to like, let me develop it. But at the same time, it's like, they didn't sold ad time. What are you going to do? You know what I mean? You got to get it done. So, you know what I mean?
It's true.
And you just got to work, you know, work backwards from that and do the best you can. And a quote, you told me you're going to trust your talent. So I try to like, when I have those insecure moments, when I'm in a draft or I'm in a treatment or whatever it is, just be like, you know what? I know, you know, I mean, I'm not saying like give half-ass effort or whatever, but just like trust that like, okay, you got, you know what I mean? You've got this figured out, or like you'll have time, you know, or you'll make time to punch this up later. Like, but you got to get to that next scene or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah. Cause that's the thing that like I've really enjoyed about like just watching your career is that, and what you just said now, you're like, sometimes I feel as insecure as I was in 2003. It's like
imposter syndrome never leaves.
I mean, there's times we've had these conversations, and it's like, it's kind of like, you know what you need to do,
yeah,
and you know what your punching weight is, and you know that you can punch above it,
right?
If in, you know, like in certain circumstances, and you all, and I think that the difficulty is that the people who don't do what we do, who don't write,
right,
they don't know what it is.
Right.
And they think, well, just, I mean, like, I write emails today, so, you know.
No, I mean, yeah, I think all writers have had the feeling of, like, people just feeling like everybody thinks that they can write. Now, here's the thing. I'm like, yo, if people tell me, like, I want to be a writer, I never discourage anybody. I'm like, yo, try it. You know what I mean? And sometimes you know, like, if somebody ain't really, you know, willing to do the work, and you go try it, you know what I mean? You know, and then you realize, like, they'll get in front of that Blake page and they're like, ooh, you know what I mean? Like, now what do I do? You know, but some people, or they'll just, you know, they'll bang it out and they'll get there. But I'm never the one to discourage you. I'm like, yo, if you feel like you got a story in you or something you want to do, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Don't wait. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you might as well try to fuck with it. But at the same time, understand, like, nobody would just, you rarely hear people be like, I'm just going to direct some shit. Like, you know what I mean? How hard can it be? You know what I mean? Or like, you know, I mean, like, there are some,
you know, I mean, yeah. You've seen the struggle.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But like, but you know, people tend to think that writing is just like, whatever, you just write the lines and, you know,
like every aspect of it, particularly the aspects that people kind of like gravitate to. I mean, you know, it's obviously the cinematographer, the grip, the makeup person just still has to do the same, ends up put in the shitload of hours.
Yeah.
But these, like, the writer, the director, the actor, people think the thing is that what you see as final product, the things that touch you are so seamless.
Right.
You know, that it feels like, oh, that was easy.
If I'm able to make things look easy now, it's because I've had 20 years of, like, whacking at the tree. You know what I mean? Right. To be able to get, get that comfortable. You know what I'm saying?
Because I tell people all the time, you know, like, I was talking to a new writer the other day, and I was like, the one thing that I cannot abide by is I don't want to see the clockwork when I'm, like, reading your script. Yeah. I don't want to see... Mm-hmm. You know, like the mechanics of the movement, because that's when it's like I'm not even into your story, because it's not that it's necessarily clunky, but it's like I see how it's moving,
right?
And it's like I don't want to see that, like let me get lost,
yeah,
because that's when you're the good storyteller,
yeah.
And yeah. You know, that's the thing that where people don't get. I mean, that to me, like, obviously, you know, there's the movie that you had 10 years to do and everyone fucking loved it and it was awesome.
Right.
And there's the movie that you had, like, considerably less time to write.
Yeah,
was awesome.
I'm not going to get, nor do I want 10 year development periods. Yeah. I feel like I don't want to become, what's my man, Thin Red Line? What's that dude?
Terrence Malick.
Yeah, I don't want to be the Terrence Malick. Right? You know what I mean? Like every once in a while I pop my head up, like, I got this shit. Boom. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Now, at the same time, I'm like, I'm 47. I'm like, how many more years do I have as, like, a writer? You know what I mean? Like, well, you know, at a certain point I want to, you know, just develop, and that would be that, and then, you know, hang up my cleats and, you know, make rape, you know, for
produce
the, yeah, for the, you know, for the next person or whatever. But so I'm like, I'm gonna grind out, like, while I have this time and while I'm, you know, I can do
the
it.
The passion's still there,
yeah, and people are still fucking with me. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because, you know, all it takes is, like, a couple of ones that don't work,
exactly.
And then all of a sudden you're like, oh yeah, that guy,
you
yeah,
yeah,
you know
what
I mean? So yeah, so while they're still fucking with me and while people are offering me shit, like, I'm in a position now that I never thought I would be in, where I can, like, especially even as recently as mm-hmm. that bad year that I had, where I can turn jobs down, and right. I have to turn jobs down now because right. I don't have my 2000 this year is booked. You know what I mean? Like, I'm thinking about things for that. And mm-hmm. I think about that sometimes, and I'm like, and this is the thing. I was thinking about this when I was driving up here today. When, you know, when you wake up, you know, I tell you, I wake up sometimes with, like, a knot in my stomach. Right. Like, what am I going to do?
Right.
I got, you know what I mean? And I always remember, and you know.
That's what keeps you hungry, though.
It keeps you hungry. But yeah. I think to myself, I'm like, you know what? If 2003 Abdul could hear me complaining because I'm too busy,
right.
Or because, you know what I mean, how am I going to... Like, I would, in my macaroni and cheese days, you know what I mean, when I was pitching to Dave Chappelle, Sparklets guy, yes. You know what I mean, just like any fucking thing to get my foot in the door, I'm like, nigga, you dreamed
exactly.
for this shit.
You're
you know
right.
what I mean? Like, this was your wildest yes. fantasy, and now it's here. You better enjoy this uh-huh. shit, and you better, like, appreciate it. So, like, that's why I'm just like, you know, and plus, nobody wants to hear you fucking complain. You know what I mean? So I'm just like, you know, either do it or don't. You know what I mean? So you know, so I just like, you know, with other writers, I'll be like, you know, we all have our like, woe is me, or like, God, this motherfucker, this note that I just got, or this or that. Well, you know, that's just part of the grind or whatever. But like, I always just try to be mindful of the fact that like, this is the result of like all those years of insecurity and all those years of like, will I ever make it? And now you finally have, if this is what making it is, that that I'm like, all right, man, you know what I mean? Like, you know, you got that, you got what you asked for, you know.
Good. That was up. Yeah. On that note, thank you, man.
thank you guys for having me.
That was a nice 2-hour episode. We just going in.
Ah, wow, nice. Man. Yeah, time flies, man. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you were giving people hella game. Oh, and like I said, what we love to hear is how. You know what I mean? Right. We have a lot of people. We all listen to a lot of podcasts. Right. Oh, I got this job and then I did this and then I didn't. And there's like no.
Yeah.
And people are not hearing how.
People don't want to talk about the valleys.
Exactly.
The valleys is what drives people out of the business. Right. The valleys is what makes everyone get jaundiced on the business. And the people who can successfully navigate the valleys are the ones who are really, they have something to say, they have the talent to say it, and they have the perseverance. Because you can go and look at anybody's IMDb page and say, okay, what happened?
Right. Yeah. There's a gap here, or whatever the fuck.
But there's two things you can say. You can say, what happened? He fucking got 9 movies in a row. Or what happened? He did 9 movies and next thing there's no movie for years.
Right.
Yeah. And it's like, I remember, I forget his name, but the guy, we were talking with him at the party, the December party, your boy who wrote King's Ransom.
Yeah, Wayne.
I remember when we first met him at that bar up on Cahuenga and we were hanging out and that movie came out. And this is, and I didn't realize this at the time, but you made a good point. The urban comedies kind of cooled down.
Yeah, they did.
He was saying, well, my movie killed urban comedies.
That's because Wayne is like very self-effacing.
It was like, oh, that's an interesting point. And but the level of like, you know, and he's got fucking Anthony Anderson. Anthony Anderson's at the top of his game. And it's like, why did that movie not work?
Right.
And just a lot of things. But it's like, you know, but that's that valley that you fall in, and then you know, and now he was on Black Famous, and also the kind of shit,
White Famous.
And it's like you know, it's like and you got to navigate it, because if you can't, then
you got to be able to reinvent yourself sometimes.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, so I took a little sojourn into animation, and I'm not saying that I'd never do that again. I actually did like it. I liked it. It was very freeing in some ways.
Probably taught you a lot about stories.
It straight up did. You know what I mean? And you know, and so I still take animation meetings sometimes and stuff like that. So I'm just like, you know, when I signed with ICM, one of the things they asked me is like, well, how would you categorize yourself? Like, what's your genre? You know what I mean? Like, you do this, you do that. Because they're trying to think, how did they sell you?
Yeah.
And I said, I was like, I know this might make it tough on y'all, but I don't fall into a category. And I was like, because I feel like when we ask writers to do that, as audience members, you don't be like, I just watch horror. That's all I watch.
Right.
You know what I mean? I never want to laugh. You know what I mean? Or like, you know, like, I was like, so as story consumers, we don't say that there's only one shit I watch. It just depends on what it is. Mm-hmm. You know? Now, not everybody is funny, or not everybody can write a thriller, or not everybody, you know what I'm saying? So like, yeah, you know, but I've got a lot of interest. I sometimes want to write comedy. Sometimes I want to, you know, write drama, whatever. So I'm like, that's, you know, whatever interests me, that's what I want to do. Right. And sometimes I want to write animation, you know, or it's something for kids, you know.
That's good. That's good. So where you at, Abdul? You on Twitter? You on Instagram?
Instagram, Abdul the Writer. It took me a long time to join that shit. You know what I mean? But I got shamed into it. Facebook forever, man. But yeah, I have no business cards. So if you want to, you know, DM, you can slide in my DMs. You know what I mean? It might take me a while to hit you back.
He was down in the DM, wasn't he?
Yeah. But that's that. And
Twitter.
No Twitter, nah, man. I feel like, man, I gotta, you know.
He's like, I'm a grown ass man.
He's got a family. He's got the little girls. You know what?
Can I honestly tell you one of the reasons when I go dark on social media? It's because a lot of people I work with are also on there, and I feel like if I say something, they're like, "Oh, you got time to post? But where my, you know, where?
Where's my scripts?
Yeah,
where is my script?
I feel like, especially like when I'm on the deadline, I'm like, just don't say shit. Don't tag me or nothing. Like, I don't want to know that I even left the house at all. You know what I mean? Damn. And I really don't leave the house at all. You know what I mean? But for real, bro, I was like, you know, I can't until I turn in my shit. Then I'll have like my little a little breathing room, man.
Right.
Yeah. So obviously we've announced Salt-N-Pepa, and there's a few other joints that I got lined up for this year. you know, one of them, it's, it scares the shit out of me, and that's exactly why I know I should be doing it, because it's very big in scope.
Right.
And it, you know what I mean? Like, I felt the same way about New Edition at first, when I was like, why me? Like, why should I be able to write this? Like, you know what I mean? But then I was like, you know, over the years, I realized when you have those, like, why me moments, that's probably,
exactly,
that's when you should, that's what pushes you as a writer to get better. So I'm like,
and the fear, because it's like you said, as a writer, you have so many interests. You can write what you want to write.
Yeah.
The fear is that you might say to yourself, I don't, like you said, the scope could be massive. It's like the Wells thing. Like I told you when I read that, like that was like so out of my wheelhouse when I wanted to write that.
Yeah.
But I kept saying to myself, but that's good.
Right.
That's good, because I can just, you know, like I can walk that tightrope.
Mm-hmm.
And the times is that when I'm like facing the blank page and I'm walking that tightrope, that's when I was able to create some of my favorite stuff in the script. Cause I was like, you know what? Fuck it. If anyone likes it, I know what, you know what? I don't care if no one likes it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Quietly, you got to write that way sometimes. Yeah. You know what I mean? You want to please people, but you can't, if you're trying to like stay ahead of the trends and write for that, like by the time your shit gets out, like the trends already then changed anyway.
Bingo.
You know what I mean? And you know, if you're like, oh, Insecure is hot, I'm gonna write my Insecure. Like, no, don't do that.
No.
There's already an Insecure. You know what I mean? Like, come up with your own shit. Issa Rae came up with her own shit. Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I was just gonna say, one of the things I love. Yeah, we're above 2 hours.
Oh, shit.
No, we're good. Yeah. Don't worry about it. They'll listen or they won't. I don't give a
fuck. Okay, yes. See, this is all, I'm used to commercials and shit. Like advertising. Like, really? No, you can't go 1 second over. Anyway.
Please. This is my show. Yeah. So, I was going to say, one of the things I love about what you're saying, you started saying when we were offline, was I love that. I really want the young writers to hear, because we have listeners all over the world. I want them to hear that even a writer who's out there now, who just fucking won an award last week,
right,
it still gets butterflies about a job.
No question.
Still is nervous about, can I do this?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No question. Yeah, I absolutely do. You know what I mean? But, you know,
again, and you're clearly a confident writer. You know you can write that
ass
off.
But
it ain't about that part of it.
Yeah. And sometimes I have to just, like, man up and just be like, you know what I mean? Sometimes that's my procrastination voice in me, like, oh, if I could just line up 7 more interviews or whatever. And then, you know, could we like really get started in earnest like in September? Like, nah. Like, the train ain't going to wait forever. You know what I mean? So sometimes you do have to push through that. But yeah, I do think there's a certain healthy fear you should have. You know what I mean? Athletes talk a lot about that. You know what I mean? Like, you step on the court and you get those butterflies or whatever. Like, they've done it a million times, but you...
Singers, before they go out.
Yeah, yeah.
They lose their voice, whatever.
Straight up, man. And I think there is that.
Do you think... I find, because I do a lot of biopics too, right?
Mm.
I find that the nerves, like the one I'm doing with Reggie right now, my nerves are a little there, but the more I do research, the more I'm like, oh shit, you know what I mean? Now I feel more empowered.
Every writer has those moments when it unlocks for you. You know what I mean? Like when, you know what I mean? Like, you know, at first you're just kind of like going through and you're pulling certain things together and like, you know, story ideas, and then you'll have like that click moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Hopefully you do. Sometimes you don't, you know what I mean? But it's the best feeling, even better like than completing a script, is when I have that moment where I'm like, okay, I see the story now. Like I can kind of see it. You know what I mean? Or I see this character arc now. I'm like, I know what I'm trying to say now. Right. Or, you know what I mean? I figured out what the point of it all is. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Hopefully you get there. But yeah, that's, that to me is what, like, that fucking charges me up when I get that feeling.
Well, yeah, because like that's the moment, like you said, once it unlocks for you, I know for me that there's the idea, there's the characters, and I'm trying to figure out how it's all gonna lay out.
Yeah.
And once you kind of find like those two or three little, I mean, for me, it's like I find two or three little turns in the story, and I'm just like, oh.
Yeah.
He said it's all going to go downhill from here.
Right.
And it just kind of like takes this pressure off, at least for me, and you know, I'm just writing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm not, because the hardest, I mean, for me, like figuring the story and like placement of stuff and like, and all that kind of stuff will come later because you know, so much of it is fucking rewriting, just so much of it is, but you just got to get there.
It all is. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You have to get there to rewrite it. You know?
Yeah.
And
that's
a lot of people.
You could do a whole entire other show just on rewriting. You know what I mean?
We've done many of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure you have. I'll say this though, man. It's something that I didn't do early in my career, and now I try to make it a point to do it, is I want to be able to distill whatever the script is into a single idea that I can articulate, right? Like, thematically.
Right.
So for New Edition Story, at one point I realized, I was like, you know what it is? accept your family for who they are, not for who you want them to be. Mm. And every choice that everyone makes in that movie is ultimately leading them towards that. You know what I mean? Like, that's the theme. That's, you know, like, so, because I would get intimidated by, like, a big three-night miniseries, and I'm writing the whole thing and all these characters. I was like, that's really what the point of all this is. That's what I want these characters to take away from this. For Bobby Brown's story, it was, there was a line that I had early on when his mother catches him, like, about to, like, before he, you know, gets his first solo deal, and he's, like, in some drug shit in Boston, and he goes and about to take his father's gun out and, you know, get into some wild ass shit, and she catches him, and it's a scene that's in the movie, and we ultimately changed the line, but there was a line I had where she says, you know, because he's already got, like, a kid by that point, and she's like, he's like, I gotta do this to feed my family. She's like, making babies don't make you a man, or making money don't make you a man, and making babies don't make you a father, right? And I was like, you know, and he doesn't get it at that point at 16 years old, but that's where he ultimately gets to it. All the ups and downs of his life leads him to that. It's like, what essentially, it's what's really important, you know what I mean? Being, you know, money, all the material shit that I thought that would fulfill me and make me, you know, whatever, it didn't give him peace. And ultimately, you know what I mean, just having a kid, you know what I mean, and giving that kid money, you know what I mean, like, you got to be there, you got to be in the trenches, you got to be, you know, wiping noses and doing all, you know, so, and you, he has to lose everything he has before, he, you know, so I was like, being able to distill it, that's been a trick, I guess.
That's I've a learned, big one.
You know, over the years, is being able to distill a big idea into a digestible idea and knowing that all your narrative, all your choice, it also lets you know, like, if a scene is going on too long, or if this scene really necessary, it's like, am I, is it getting to the point of what I'm trying to say? Like, that one line idea, if it's not, I don't need it.
Yeah, that's, I mean, brilliant. That's a great point. I mean, I, a lot of times when I want to write stuff, you got to come up with that theme, because, and a lot of times, I'll do a pass where I'm just looking at the theme of that, of every scene, to go, if I, like you said, if I answered this, if I haven't answered it, or it's not addressing that, can I add it in?
Right.
Or does the scene got to go out? Because if I can't add it in right, because it's going to, like, somehow, like, upset the balance of the scene, then maybe the scene's got to go.
Then you also know, it also helps you know not only just what you can lose, but what you got to fight for. You know what I mean? Because, like, you're always going to go through that process where you're cutting shit for time, or cutting shit for this, or for whatever reason. Like, nah, this is, and I can tell you why, because, you know, we're, you know what I mean? You're getting to this. So, I mean, yeah, that's, I just wanted to just leave with that, because that's, I mean, over the year, the past few years, that's been something that's served me really well. And Carl tried to tell me, Carl Franklin tried to tell me that. He has his own kind of way of doing that for the things that, you know, he'll do it like, justice leads to freedom or something like he distills it into what, like, a bite-sized idea that he's, you know, and he tried to tell me that back in the day, and it didn't quite click for me until I found it. And I was like, oh, that's what he meant, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes you're doing it subconsciously.
Yeah.
You're not even aware of it, but I think it's important to be aware, because it's also part of your pitch.
Right.
If you're smart.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Even if you don't tell the exact stack when you go in, if you know, like, you know what I mean, what's this, like, what's the point? That's you know what I mean, that's everything you write, that's, you gotta have that. What's the point? It can't just be the set pieces, it can't just be the jokes, it's gotta be, you know, it's gotta be something that you're trying
that
to
makes you the hack. The difference between the hack and the real writer to me is they don't write, they don't have a point, they're just writing to be right, to servicing someone else's, it's just like someone else's concept, and the idea is the distillable idea.
That's it.
You
that's
get it. You understand what it means to you, because, you know, I mean, like I hate having to cut scenes. You know, I hate it. So it's just like, fuck, man. Because at the end, but then you got to sit there and you got to say to yourself, you have to come up with some sort of litmus test as to why does this scene have to stay. And if it, and it's really a, you just, it's.
I think, you know, though. Sometimes you get,
you do.
You start reading the script. I don't mean to interrupt you. You start reading the script and you get to that scene and you're like, I'll skip that and I'll go to this. You just start fucking with it. You think it's good. You're like, it's good.
Yeah.
But you're avoiding it for a reason,
and
to me.
And sometimes these decisions are made over your head and you feel like, What? Like, I remember I had that experience on Lottery Ticket. I had that experience on New Edition. And then you watch it. You watch that when the edit is saying, like, oh, I guess I didn't need that. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, the audience isn't dumb. They'll figure they can connect the dots.
Well, see, I mean, that to me is the one thing that, like, I think about a lot when I'm, you know, because they're direct, you know. Yeah. So I think about, like, what don't you need? You know, because time is always an issue.
Yeah, that's a whole day. You gotta,
there's things that you write that you know mean something to you, and the thing that you as the writer can never anticipate is, oh, there might be one image that tells me this whole scene,
right?
that the director said, what yeah. you know, and the director might even know until they're mm-hmm. on set. And they're like, right. oh, you know, if we just get this shot, it'll say everything else here.
Yeah.
And then we don't need the rest of this.
Right.
And that's something that you can never anticipate.
You can't.
You yeah. know, you can yeah. never, but that's, a, but that's, I think also.
The setting is going to set all, you won't even, yeah. you won't know that on the page for
you,
the most part.
You'll never know the page because no. you're not there and you see stuff. You always right. see stuff. I mean, they always talk about the happy accidents. There's happy accidents in every part, but the happy accident on the set is you see something that no one scripted, no one could have conceived ahead of time. Mm. And it just tells you the story.
Right. Mm.
In just like an image. And you're like, fuck it. This is like, it will yeah. save me for, it, will, it could save me.
Yeah.
You might be saying
yeah.
to yourself, yeah. it, like, oh, this could be running long. Because you kind of know when a movie might be running long when you're filming it. You're right. like, fuck.
There's
fuck.
No worse feeling than that shit. When you see a, when you see a finished product and it's getting, like, you're losing the audience, like, whoa.
I tell everybody about, I've done a couple different films, but the first, my very first movie that I ever had produced,
yeah.
I wrote this 90-page, fast-paced
yeah.
horror film. It sold to AFM. And the director came in. I'm telling. Not telling you, bitch. the director came in and made it 126 pages.
Yeah, yeah.
So you already know the problem.
Yeah,
they went from this to.
Yeah, pacing's all fucked. Yeah, yeah.
And people are like, why you never tell me about the movie? I'm like, I don't want you to see that movie.
Don't claim that one. Yeah, yeah. No, bro. I feel you. Yeah, those are the tough things when decisions are made over your head. Sometimes they fuck your shit up. But anyway, man, I feel like
I know we talk it all
yeah,
day.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell people again where you're at on Instagram.
Abdul the Writer.
Right. Where yeah. you at, Chris?
Unauthorized CBD on Instagram and Twitter.
Instagram. And I'm your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter at Hilliard Guest. You guys can follow the show, Screenwriters RR on Twitter. Any questions, screenwritersrantroom@gmail.com. Please go on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, whatever you listen to. Give us a 5-star review. We need that for the metrics. Follow us. Share the show. Where are we, Chris?
And on our Patreon page. Please donate because donation is love.
Exactly. And Lisa will be back soon. Soon and very soon. We are going to see the king. Some shit like that. we stupid name. Let me think. Anything. Hey, thank you, Maurice, for sitting in with us.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
We always have some of the young writers sitting in sometimes just getting some game.
Sure.
And it gives them a chance to, you know, meet yeah. an OG.
Hey, from way back. I guess that's what I am
from
now.
From way back.
Yeah, 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 man. Jesus Christ, it's been a long journey.
We all getting gray hair, all of us. Yeah. Like, just old as fuck.
Now I'm due for a fade right now. That's what I said. Yeah.
Anyway, so everybody joining me, y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. On the show, we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what, everybody?
2019.
Peace, y'all.
I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Rant Room. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rent room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Rant Room.